My name is Tim. I'm an addict. Thank you for having me here. I like this focus on the hopelessness. Although I don't think we are really hopeless, we're hopeless. Certainly, I was hopeless when I got into recovery. My native state is hopelessness, but that doesn't mean there is no hope. My clean date is 24th of July, 1993. I was 21. I'm not 21 anymore. What does hopelessness mean? I'm hopeless after the first substance. My addiction has a life of its own once it's activated. Very simple. Both on the day itself and in terms of the fact that when it becomes activated, I can't deactivate it. I can be off for months or years when I start again. So I've got to be very careful not to activate it. But left to my own devices, I will. This is the second element of hopelessness. Quite simply, it will seem like a good idea. And it will be accompanied by all sorts of rationalizations about the, just like with that alcohol warning, that the illusion is that altering myself chemically over here is a disaster, but altering myself chemically over there is just fine. That'll be fine and dandy. But to me, it's all the same thing. Now, the dynamics of each substance, they operate differently. It's not to detract from that. There are some substances that agreed with me, and there are some that didn't. There are some that I could take or leave, but I don't have any of them anymore because I don't know where starting would take me. But you know what? There's more to it than that for me. When the program was proposed to me in 1993, people said that I would change completely. And on one level, I didn't like this at all. Although I was very unhappy, I thought if I'm not me and I become someone else, then my problem hasn't been solved. You've just erased me and you're just going to erase me and replace me with someone else. So that, and what's the point? I was attached to being me. There's nothing wrong with being attached to being oneself. As my ex's mother would say, it wouldn't do for us all to be the same. So there is a value, and I was in touch with the value of being who I am. But the genius of the program, I think, is that it has allowed me to change what I believe, think, and do, which in consequence radically alters my life and every aspect of it, but without changing the fundamental nature or substance of who I am. In other words, my soul, my spirit remains entirely intact. Neither of them were the problem. The problem was how I was living. The problem was how I saw things. The problem was what I thought about. The problem was what I believed. Now, the thing about the substances is, and other behaviors which create the same effects in my brain as the substances did. Everyone's got their own list, so I have to be careful about certain other behaviors I've learned over the years because they will lead me back to the deadliest substances eventually. So I can't allow anything which gives me a cheap and empty high, or a rush. Now, the thing about when I'm under the influence, I'm really not myself. Who I really am is utterly suppressed. I'm reduced to the level of an animal, a talkative, manipulative animal, but an animal nonetheless. If one's dealing with addicts who are in active addiction, it can be helpful to remember this. A friend of mine, Al-Anon, is also part of my history. So occasionally there's the odd insight, which I think helps. A friend of mine in Al-Anon says that your little addict that you love so much and you think is so devoted to you, if they're still in their addiction, they're like a Komodo dragon. The Komodo dragon, it likes heat and it likes flies. And whilst you supply both, it will appear to like you, but it doesn't. It likes heat and flies. If you stop supplying heat and flies, it will go off you very, very quickly. There will be no loyalty there. And if it gets hungry, you're lunch. So I know not to be fooled anymore. And the people that met me during my using were not fond of me, because all they knew was the addict. The people I'd known before I became an addict, they were fond of me, and they were the ones that I hurt because they could still remember who I had been, and held out hope that I could once again become that person. And indeed, when I'm using, I can do a passable impression of being who I really am, but I'm really not there at all. Locked away, deactivated whilst something else is running the show, but using all of my knowledge, experience, and history to do it. It's a nasty little thing, addiction. Go to the doctors for something, they'll be interested in in three things: diagnosis, prognosis, and treatment plan. The diagnosis for me as an addict is very simple. Do I repeatedly get myself into trouble because of the amount that I'm using? Yes, good. Tick. Does getting into trouble keep me permanently and easily away from the first whatever? No. Tick. If I tick those two boxes, I'm rewording what it talks about at the top of page 44 of the big book. If I tick those two boxes, I have it. Diagnosis positive. The prognosis is what happens to a person with that diagnosis. And what happens? First of all, it's going to get worse if it's not arrested. And it's interesting in the big book, they use the word arrested. They're stopped in its tracks, what arrested means. Not eradicated, not lifted out of me, not cut off me, not removed like a tattoo. It's like the word through a stick of rock, it goes all the way through, it can't be removed. Try to scrub it off, it's still there. There's the layer below. It's if I've got it, it's progressive, not arrested. It's incurable, which means I'm going to have it forever. And it's fatal. And the difficulty about fatal is you don't know when. Sadly, one knows people who drink again and are literally dead within a day. Other people, poor old souls, seem to carry on for years, causing the most terrific problems for themselves and others, and miraculously stay alive. It's unfathomable. When and how death comes is unknown. The fact of it coming or being accelerated is undeniable. So that's the prognosis. The rock bottom is the recognition that I've got it and what it means. It is not the circumstances which bring me to the table at which we discuss the diagnosis and the prognosis. It's not the feeling that gets me into the doctor's office. It's the discussion I have in the doctor's office when it hits home what I'm dealing with. That is the rock bottom. If someone hasn't had a rock bottom, they haven't understood step one. I think the rock bottom comes as a result of doing step one, not it is not what brings about step one, as it were. The sense that this is intolerable and something must be done about it comes from working the first step. People talk about having to accept their alcoholism, and the trouble is with accept, it means so many different things. I have to not deny it, I have to accept it, to accept my addiction, because I'm multiply addicted to all sorts of things, all sorts of substances, all sorts of behaviours. I have to accept it in the sense of facing the facts and not attempting to deny, outmaneuver, outwit, evade, play down or decorate the facts, accept the facts as they are. But recovery requires me to find the facts thus accepted unacceptable. So it's unacceptable for me to continue along the path I'm on. So that's the diagnosis. And by the way, unmanageability, I've got a very simple view of it. If I can't control, left to my own devices, whether or not I use, I can't. I'm not in charge of my life. Whether or not I use is in charge of my life. And if I hand over the reins, it's got the reins. Very simple. I'm literally not in charge. The treatment is now. If you're very new to CA, I've got a little bit of a shock. Is it going to involve this frightful thing called a higher power? And I'd love to say we've got, options B, C, and D, but we don't. There isn't anything else. But that's not as bad as it sounds. The marvelous thing about higher powers is they're considerably more intelligent than I am. So even if I don't know what they are, they know what a higher power knows what I am. If I don't know how to find the higher power, that doesn't matter. It knows how to find me. It was here first. So I don't have to be clever or cute or smart in any way about finding a higher power. What I have to do is the remainder of the steps. My first sponsor helpfully told me that I didn't need to worry about God. I'm going to use the word God from higher power from this point onwards because it's shorter. What I mean by the word God is nobody's business but my own. There's nothing worse than one of those wretched step three meetings where everyone trots out their beliefs and you leave thinking, I never want to go to another meeting again if I have to believe all of that. So it's best to say absolutely nothing about exactly what the higher power is, except to say, if trusted, it will guide me to live fruit clean, sober, and fruitfully. There we go. Everything else can be discussed one to one in a setting which is not going to trigger people left, right, and centre. But what my sponsor said to me was, you don't need to know anything about God other than it's not you. In other words, you can't be trusted. And this is true in a very literal sense. As an addict, I'm someone to whom getting strung out will periodically seem like a perfectly good idea. And the faculty of discerning that that has happened, that that thought has arrived, this insane thought has arrived, is switched off sometimes. Sometimes I recognize insane thoughts as insane. Other times I can go for weeks with an insane, irrational pattern of thinking before realizing I've gone off on a tangent, a wild goose chase. So, and this should be great relief if you're troubled by your mind. So you don't have to trust it ever again. But what does one trust? And it's all very well saying God, but what does trusting God mean? Well, it means living by a system, which is what CA offers, what the 12 steps offer. Living by a system rather than living by, though I'll tell you how I used to live. Imagine that in my mind there's a little bird. Tells me what to do. And whenever it tweets something, I say, very good, and I go and do it. That is how I lived. And the result of living like that was having to come to meetings. There we go, having to come to meetings for 30 years. So we don't want to listen to that little voice. What I have instead is the 12 steps, the principles which are scattered all through the big book, prayer and meditation. And prayer is talking to God, chiefly thanking and asking questions and making requests, and then meditation, which is chiefly listening and reading to listening to and reading spiritual materials and asking God to speak through those to me, regard to how that content applies to my situation. Very, very advanced monks are able to communicate directly with God, but when you look at the rigmarole they have to go through to get to a position where they can do that reliably without spiritual danger, that if one's if anyone is familiar with the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius or St. John of the Cross or any of those, it's no mean feat, and it's no walk in the park trying to form a sort of direct relationship with God where God will reveal these great things. Very dangerous as well. So I don't do it. I keep it very, very simple. And the program is very good at this because it says if you're going to be relying on those four things, number one, the 12 steps, number two, the principles of the program, number three, prayer and meditation, number four, the sensible people around you. Now, they may not be sensible with regard to their own lives, but they can use usually smell bullshit when it's in front of them, when it's someone else's. So these people needn't be perfect. They'll be able to spot when I'm full of shit, when I can't. A friend of mine said many years ago, and it did rather worry me. Might need to do a little bit of muting there. It worried me. He said he didn't believe, wasn't a sponsee of mine, he was someone in recovery. He said he didn't believe in sponsorship anymore after I think he was sober around 20 years. Didn't believe in it because no one knows me better than myself. And a shudder went down my back. I thought the people I live with, the person I live with, knows me better than I do. And what they certainly know better than I do is what the back of my head looks like. And so the people around me are a far greater guardrail against my own noxious thinking and behavior than a very abstract God. God is very good, but seems to work through people. I think that's a fairly safe thing to say. So, a life lived based on those four things: program, principles, prayer, people, unlocks a fifth E, the power to walk in the right direction, smart feet. If I walk in the right direction, and sometimes I mean that quite literally. When to go right will be to go to a place where bad things happen, and to go left is to go home. If I can get my feet to go in the right direction, my head will follow. They say, that there's a traditional religious community where they talk about the man being the head of the household, but the wife being the neck, and that the neck determines which direction the head is pointed. He's not in charge. And it's like that in AA. If I get my feet pointed in the right direction and walking in the right direction, my head, which appears to be the head of my household, the household of me, is no longer really in charge. Something else is in charge. Whatever guides the right action is in charge. That's what turning my will and life over to God means. It means taking the indicated action, regardless of what I think or feel about the indicated action. I mentioned this before. A couple of people who are on this meeting will be bored by me saying this. But a friend of mine went to a job interview where they asked that wretched question, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And the answer, if I were to give it for myself, is I try not to see myself at all. And my horizon is literally only today. When I look at my life now, I'm perfectly happy with it. And there is no element of it which I've consciously, deliberately planned. Certainly, if you'd taken me back 5 years, 20 years, 30 years, I couldn't have planned any of it. So what would the good have planning? What good would it have done to have planned 20 or 30 years, to have envisioned what I'm supposed to do? The program is very simple. It says, do the indicated actions today, and everything will work itself out. Now, it seems to run, to my thinking, quite against the wisdom of the world, as it might be called, where you're supposed to sort of take command of your own destiny and forge a place for yourself in the world and you know, optimize. That's one of the modern words. Optimize your profile on LinkedIn, that sort of thing. Pay someone to soup up your CV, as they call it. I don't bother with anything. I do what is in front of me to do. If I run out of things to do, if I run out of obligations, I'll say to God, give me more obligations. And I tell you, in 30 years, I've never run out of obligations. So it appears to me, what is God's will? What's in front of me? If it needs doing, do it. That's God's will. It's not at the level of how to structure my life or where I see myself in 20 years' time or how I would like others to see me or what position I should hold in society or my community or what I should achieve or what qualifications I should have or what job I should have or who I should be married to or any. I don't need to plan any of those things. A planning mind doesn't trust God. Now, I need to do practical things. Sometimes God says, thank you for trusting me. Now, here's something you need to do a little bit of scheduling. Make a little list of things to do and put them in the right order and then do them. But that's what we call through the concepts delegated authority. I don't have ultimate authority there. I'm given things to do. Over the last few years, my other half and I have spent an awful lot of time looking after my elderly mother. And I thought to myself, I weighed up in my mind everything I've done in my so-called work life over the last 30-odd years since I've been sober. And the very simple, ordinary help and companionship that my other half and I have given to my mother over particularly the last 7 or 8 years. And my entire work life, I think, weighs nothing on the pair of scales. And taking my mother out for lunch on a Sunday weighs an infinite amount. The world's notions of what matters, I think, are quite wrong and very modern. The sort of the materialism, the individualism, the hedonism are very modern concepts, and not all the data in, but it doesn't seem to be working out very well from my perspective. But more eternal values of being part of something and looking at what I can contribute to it rather than what I'm getting out of it. Giving, not getting, is the guiding principle. I talked about one of the P's that I trust is the principle. And that's the chief principle. Rather than considering myself a victim of a wicked world, to say, I'm responsible for my experience in the world, and while I'm here, I might as well put myself to work. So, God, what do you want me to do today? And I just get on with it. That's all I have. Thank you for listening.